Christian Democrats and CIA and our influence all along since the war. And where was the article that you, I just turned on in the middle, and you were talking about $7 million that the CIA sent to the Christian Democrats. Where did those figures come from?
Well, this particular article, which I talked about at some length because it's a little less of a standard and establishment source than I usually use, was from a newspaper called People's World. However, most of those figures came out. People's World is published in Berkeley, and it's basically it's a leftist newspaper.
Yeah, right.
However, most of those figures came out, I believe, in the House Select Committee hearings on intelligence that were in 1978, I believe. And most of those figures and a lot of information came out. And also there was a lot of information from Philip Agee and Victor Marchetti, both, about money and things being channeled into Italy by the CIA.
But in some of their books?
Yeah.
Philip Agee was a former agent?
Right, yeah. Philip Agee's book was called Inside the Company.
Oh, yeah.
And Victor Marchetti's was called CIA and the Cult of Intelligence. And both books...
Marchetti. Yeah, all right. Marchetti, okay, Victor.
Right.
And, what about the Rome Daily Mail? I mean, and the New Republic are both funded by CIA. Is that
well? The New Republic has had a lot of connections. What they're talking about here is that at the time it was being published by Robert Myers, who is an ex-CIA agent with involvements, who was an ex-CIA station chief, I think, out in
Do you know who the publisher is now? I mean, is he still
not at the moment? Not at the moment. No, I don't believe he still is, and I don't know who the publisher is at the moment.
So the publisher is a former. And what about the Rome Daily American? That is.
The Rome Daily American, is all I know about, again, is that it was, like many others, it was a heavily CIA-funded newspaper in Italy.
Well, where else could you suggest that I could read to get a little bit more than just one article in a leftist newspaper for this kind of...
Oh, God. Well, this is the thing. Okay, the best thing
to
do...
Who wrote the article you were reading?
Who wrote the article I was reading? It was a man named Carl Bloise, B-L-O-I-C-E.
Okay. B-L-O-I-C-E.
Yeah, I'll tell you something here. Take... The next two.
I can call him and find out what his search.
Yeah, the next two Saturdays. Okay, we've been covering this story at great length on One Step Beyond here for like the last 6 months.
The payoffs or the assassination.
The whole thing, because it's this immense web.
Tied in kind of together, aren't they?
Yeah, it's an immense web, and we've been covering the whole thing. Another place too, on one of the other shows, public affairs shows on KFJC. Dave Emery, who does Hard Rain, is doing a special on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock, where he's updating. He's been covering the story too, and he's going back over some of the information. And he's got a lot of information and sources on the different ties, CIA and organized crime ties in Italy and other places that might be worthwhile to you. Okay.
Yeah.
And one last thing, okay, which is send us a letter up here at the Public Affairs Department with your name and your address and everything, and we will try and get you some information, too.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting.
Okay.
Thanks. I'm real glad to know you exist. Are you on all day?
We're on, the station is on all day, every day, and this show is just on Sunday nights from 9 to 11.
Are you a student?
Sort of. You have to be. You have to be.
Keep at it, kid.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, you are listening to One Step Beyond, and you are listening to KFJC. And if you'd like to give me a call, I'll be happy to put you on the air. And we are talking about a variety of things tonight. We are, again, we've been updating the interminable associations between the attempted assassination of the Pope and the Propaganda Due Masonic Lodge fascist government scandal and the Banco Ambrosiano Vatican banking scandal and also the STBOM Guns for Drugs for Terrorism Network. And all of those things, we've been updating those. We've also been talking about Alan Dorfman and his recent death and some other things, too, that we've touched on, and we will touch on others. So if you want to give me a buzz, once again, the number is 415-941-2500, and good evening, San Jose.
Hello, Nip.
Yes.
Byrne.
Hello, Byrne.
I've got an article from today's Mercury. It's got a Dateline Chicago, and it says, mobster allegedly ordered Dorfman slaying.
Is this the one about Lombardo?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. Well, why don't you go ahead and read that?
All right. It says, informants have provided investigators with a startling tip in the Alan Dorfman murder investigation. that Dorfman's murder was ordered by top-ranking mobster Joseph Joey the Clown Lombardo from his downtown jail quarters. The Chicago Sun-Times said Saturday that informants reported that the major reason behind the alleged Lombardo hit order was Dorfman's failure to come up with a $2.5 million cash bond that would have sprung Lombardo from the Metropolitan Correctional Center. Let's see, and then it goes on. In addition to the Lombardo tip, investigators are continuing to pursue their original theory that Dorfman was slain because he knew too many underworld secrets and was a potential informant. Dorfman was convicted last month with Lombardo, who has risen from a crime syndicate hitman to the top echelon in a Teamsters bribery conspiracy trial. Both faced sentencing February 10th. Dorfman was freed on $5 million bond, while Lombardo, unable to make his bond without revealing the source of his wealth, sits in jail. Lombardo reportedly pressed Dorfman to use his more visible assets from Dorfman's Amalgamated Insurance Agency Services Incorporated to gain freedom from Lombardo, for Lombardo. But Dorfman is said to have relayed a message to Lombardo that Dorfman's regard for Lombardo was low and that no bond money would be forthcoming. That's the extent of it.
Right. Now, I don't know much myself about Joseph Joey the Clown Lombardo. Ted, who I was talking to today, who does quite a bit of research on organized crime, said he himself, and I don't even recall what his exact reasoning was, he said he didn't think that this was probably true, or at least that this guy may have been a little miffed at Dorfman, and Dorfman may have not been too pleased with him either, but he didn't think that it was likely that this guy, who is a comparatively minor figure, was the one who would have had Dorfman bumped off. However, I can't give you any backup for that one way or the other, and I do think it is important, and I do, you know, the allegations were made, and I'm glad that you brought it up.
Uh-huh. Well, it has the feel to me of being just the kind of smokescreen that someone might want to put up to get investigated.
Yeah, like maybe pin it on some minor functionary.
Sure.
Who's already out of the way and can't do anything.
Yeah, they might want to just spread the investigators around.
That's a good point. Well, and there's apparently, you know, from what I've been reading lately, and you know, you heard the different people say, you know, Roy Williams and all these different people saying that, let's face it, Dorfman's gone. It sounds like the guy had more enemies than Carter has little pills, you know. So it's going to take the investigators a while anyway if they're sincerely trying. I have a feeling that to some extent the federal investigators may actually be, you know, well, no, because the ones that are serious about this, it's going to really hamstring them because it's going to scare a lot of other people off. But the ones who, a lot of the people in the federal government who may have some ties themselves are probably just as happy about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there may be some impedance from high places.
That's likely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Keep up the good work.
Great. Thanks for calling. Thanks for sharing that with us. Bye-bye. Okay. I'm going to take a short break here, folks, because I've been reading for a long time. And when I come back, I'm hoping that you folks will help me out by giving me a lot of calls and letting me know what's on your mind. So we are, once again, we're going to take a quick break here. And the number, so you can be ready to call and get on the air when we come back with all the lines open, is 415-941-2500. And I certainly expect to hear something from all you folks. Once again, those of you who are new listeners, or are relatively new listeners and are feeling intimidated by all this information and facts and things like this, don't hesitate to call up and just ask questions about things that have been talked about, or, you know, offer something that you yourself think is interesting and that we might be interested in. In other words, we're not trying to turn this into a members-only kind of thing. And I never liked Tony Geary anyway, so feel free. Give me a call. Let me know what's on your mind. 415-941-2500 is the number. And meanwhile, don't go away, because in just a couple of minutes, Nip Tuck, myself, will return with One Step Beyond here on KFJC 89.7, Los Altos Hills. Now, in honor of the rain coming down.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of...
Good evening. Hello. And this is a soggy but undaunted Nip Tuck. Back in the studio with you here at KFJC, the only radio station that counts in the entire Bay Area. And with KFAT biting the dust and KSAN gone a couple of years ago. And, well, I mean, there's some other okay stations, but there's nobody that really counts anymore except the folks here at KFJC. And I say that not for my own credit, because they were here before I was, and if the powers that be have their way, they'll be here after I'm gone. So who knows? But anyway, wanted to thank you folks for being with me tonight. And the show isn't over. Don't get that idea. That's not what I mean. But thanks for being with me. I hope that song was appropriate. That was, of course, Brian Ferry, ex of Roxy Music. Well, I guess he's back in Roxy Music sort of now. It's very complicated. Anyway, a hard rain is gonna fall. And indeed, a hard rain is falling. Let's hope it's not the biblical type. Despite our iniquities and sins, I think most of us still would like to live out our measly little lives and not be overcome by le deluge. So anyway, this is Nip Tuck. I've got some lines open at 415-941-2500. I've still got one or two left, although they are filling up fast. So if you want to give me a call, and if you don't want to wait till the end of the show, and you know who you are, all you folks out there, give me a buzz now. Let me know what's up. And those of you, once again, I want to make this clear, because I realize as I listen to my own show sometimes that it does get a little bit esoteric, perhaps. And if you are curious about anything that we're talking about, okay, we pride ourselves on being able to document, you know, the stuff that we're talking about on this show and not just making wild, surrealistic claims. And if you're curious about this or the history of any of these things that we're talking about, or if you have something else that you're interested in, either yourself you have some information on, or you'd like to ask and maybe we can try and find out for you, because we do have access to a lot of different political research of one kind or another. Anyway, I would be most happy to hear from you, whether you're a first-time listener or even more likely a first-time caller. Still like to hear from you. And it's just exactly the kind of thing that you should do if you're interested, and if you want to know what's going on, is to share those feelings with some other people, because there's a lot of people out there who want to know what's going on, and they'd love to have you be their representative. So don't feel scared at all, okay? Just give me a buzz. 941-2500 is the number. And good evening, Sunnyvale, and welcome to One Step Beyond.
Hello, Nip. This is Field Marshal Ian. We met Thursday.
Hello, Ian. How are you?
Okay. I just want to drop an item I forgot last week about the Reagan drug bill. And the sponsor of the bill, which I clumsily admitted, was Representative Henry Waxman, Democrat from Los Angeles. And that just happens to be the area that where the Exceptional Children's Foundation's new headquarters now located. And that's the thing with Nancy Reagan and Joanna Carson contributing $450,000 literally about a week before President Reagan signed this bill and the whole big mishmash. So I just want to, you know, shoot into the bill's sponsor.
Right. Now, this is the bill. This is the bill being sponsored to do research into special drugs.
Yeah, specialized for special diseases. Really provide tax credits to worthy, legitimate causes. Now, not just everybody. Into research and development for what we called, I guess, orphan drugs for very little-known diseases, like things that affect Haitian refugees and various
right.
other items.
Yeah, all kinds of other people who need new drugs.
Right.
Right. Okay, good. So that was Henry Waxman of New York.
No, L.A.
Of L.A.
Yes,
oh,
Democrat even.
Oh, okay.
Uh-oh, yes. Okay, like I've been promising for a long time, I get this article on Pete Wilson, and it's going to be entertaining, especially for people who listened to Mabe's tape some about nearly a month ago on Pete Wilson and his tremendous, vast reservoir of, financial wealth and fiscal resources, although somewhat shady. And this article comes from, get around here, January 3rd. It's out of the, hello, Living section of San Jose Mercury.
Okay.
And it is titled, The Senator of Modest Means. Can Senator Pete Wilson find true happiness among the millionaires? And it starts, Pete Wilson's proper Eastern clothes, Brooks Brothers, his Ivy League manner, Yale Law School, and his erect military posture, Marine Corps, seem to fit him perfectly for the United States Senate. But as Wilson, who begins his term today as the Republican Senator from California, walks home on wintry days to a simple, unfurnished one-bedroom apartment on Capitol Hill, or rides the subway around Washington, some of his colleagues are apt to notice the one thing he lacks plenty of, money. He may look the part of a U.S. Senator, but when it comes to financial assets, Wilson is a relative pauper among millionaires. Wilson estimates his net worth at $50,000, meaning that in these times of inflated real estate values, he is worth less than his two top aides, as well as most of the middle-aged California newspaper reporters who will cover him. Wilson's staff says he won't even own a car when he gets here. He now drives a green 1971 Mercury. Let me paraphrase. It sounds a lot like Jerry Brown in his Plymouth.
Right.
He's just trying to imitate him. Which he is planning to donate to a San Diego arts group for its annual auction. He says he won't replace it immediately, but will content himself with Washington's fairly adequate public transportation system. His small apartment is rented to him on a month-to-month basis at $575 a month, while the owner waits for interest rates to come down so the building can be converted to a condominiums. Many of his peers, meanwhile, own impressive homes in Washington area, in the Washington area, as well as in their home states, perhaps a vacation place or two. And it states here that Wilson is also certainly the least wealthy of senators, said Jay Hedlund of Common Cause. Now, if that is not a, to pull it mildly, a real media blitz. In fact, it comes from a Carl M. Cannon from the Washington Bureau. And that, if anyone's listened to Mabe at all, it's just an absolute joke. In fact, I want to add here a few captions under the very nice pictures of Pete Wilson. Now, on the top of the article here is a picture of Pete Wilson at a podium, I guess after his victory. The caption states, Senator Pete Wilson takes office today, a relative pauper in a rich man's club, but he doesn't intend to let it faze him. Just below that has a picture of him and Ronald Reagan, and it states here that the president accepts a Medfly buckle belt from Wilson at the Reagan County Ranch, Reagan Country Dinner fundraiser during Wilson's Senate campaign. Don't forget the CIA in this Medfly routine. And also, just to the left of this caption is him and Pete Wilson's wife, and it states here, Wilson's divorce agreement from wife Betty Left cost him half his modest assets. Now, everyone out there is saying, so what, boring, but anyone who's listened to Mabe is probably rolling around the aisle saying, what the hell?
Well, now, okay, I myself have not heard most of her stuff on Pete Wilson, and probably a lot of other people don't either. Can you give us an idea of some of the background, of some of the stuff that she's talked about?
That is just so complex. His marriage to his wife has a lot of evidently really funny connections. I wish I could go through it. I wish I had the tape right here.
Okay, well, here's the thing to do. Okay, now maybe you won't have a chance to do that tonight, but since you finally got the article on the air, okay,
uh-huh.
And people who get a chance to hear Mabe Russell may not have heard those particular tapes.
Uh-huh.
If you've got it, why don't you see if you can get it together and give us a sort of a rundown on it, perhaps if not for tonight, for next week.
Yeah, I don't actually have the tape on me, and that's why I wish I did. I wish I taped this program, because news to me. That's why I pray for anyone who is fortunate enough to listen to that particular show, which I think it popped up on Christmas, if I'm mistaken. I've got to write a letter to Mabe. In fact, I might even send her the article. We'll find this very entertaining if they're listening out there tonight. Probably Ted might
okay.
find that interesting, if
all
he
right.
knows anything about it. But because Mabe did a very good job on Pete Wilson.
Okay, good.
And about this Medfly buckle belt, that's how it's sort of
that's
you know,
kind of cute. It's definitely kind of cute. Okay. All righty. Super. Well, let's see. Now, if we can't get anybody on tonight, and if you get a chance to run down that information, why don't you bring it back to us?
Oh, sure.
And share it with the listening audience.
I'm going to make a few pushes for some books. And I mentioned to you when I met you,
uh-huh.
It was interesting to check them out. One of them is, I highly recommend on the sort of ideological point, is a book called Cracks in the Constitution by an author, if I hopefully got him correct, Ferdinand Lugert, and it's published by Lyle Stewart Press, and it's 1982 release.
Okay.
And he makes a very interesting push in the cover flap that covers the book, and states that the average American citizen under this Constitution, and according to studies, has about as much control over his political life as the average Soviet citizen does. So if you're interested to pick that book, pick up. It's available... might as well just mention the store. It's available in Town Country Center down in Sunnyvale, if they still have some copies left.
Okay.
Little professor's bookshop, and they usually run for like $15 or something. And there's another book that came out before John DeLorean's arrest called On a Clear Day You Can See General Motors. It was told through a Patrick Wright, and it was put out by an Avon Press, and it was published in 1979. If anyone would like to check that out, very interesting parallel. And also there's another book out pertaining to John Kennedy's assassination called Best Evidence, and it's written by David Lifton.
Very controversial book, but I read it and found many parts of it quite compellingly well documented, and I was forced to agree with a lot of it, although I know that the Kennedy assassination theory has become sort of a big in-group thing, and there are a lot of people with their own theories who disagree with other people's theories, you know, on who did what to whom when. But I must say that I myself read the book and found quite a bit of it, especially a lot of the physical evidence, quite impressive.
Yes, I was not aware of the kidnapping of the body. Evidently, it's advertised in the back of the book at all. And I thought that's a very interesting aspect. Now they just sort of altered the president's body look to make it look like the autopsy was official and everything else. And
it's an interesting book also in that a lot of the stuff in there that when the book came out, a lot of the stuff about a second casket type theory stuff was poo-pooed by the establishment press. They went, oh, how silly, you know, look at this, another Kennedy conspiracy nut. And within a couple of weeks after that, several people who worked at Parkland Memorial Hospital as orderlies at the time of the assassination came out in the press and said, oh, yeah, that was true. Everybody knew there was a second casket who worked there. We just assumed that everybody knew it everywhere, you know, that it was no big secret because we all knew it, you know, and that there was... So they came out and confirmed this part of the book that had been one of the subjects of derision by the, you know, the straight press. So I thought that was very interesting.
I've yet to read it. I'm eager to pick it up. And one other book called The Auschwitz and the Allies in Auschwitz, which covers the Allied response to the mass murder of... Jewish and Slavic civilians, and it was written by Martin Gilbert, and it's put out by Holt, Winston, and Reinhardt, and it was a 1981 release,
1981.
And I guess that's not news to us, but it's sort of interesting, it's coming out now, some of this stuff. And
so you haven't seen that one yet?
It looks interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to get a copy of that, definitely.
And one other little thing that I told you this, but for anyone out there who picks up the Bourne Brotherhood, they should read the back cover of a book called Death Beam, written by Vygotsky Moss.
Robert.
That sounds like one of these little Soviet propagandists, Claire Sterling type of...
Well, he is. Robert Moss is an associate of Claire Sterling, as a matter of fact.
Well, he is.
Yeah.
Well, evidently in the back of the book, the very same William Stevenson who wrote the Bormann Brotherhood, who detailed the dangers of the anti-Bolshevik... ideology and propaganda put out by the Bormann Brotherhood to divert attention away from Nazi crimes, on the back of the book said it's a must-read book and everything else, and I was saying, is this the same William Stevenson? I turned on the same author of a book called A Man Called Intrepid, which so I knew was the William Stevenson who wrote Bormann Brotherhood, because he dedicated this particular book, the Brotherhood, to Intrepid. So I thought, oh, come on, don't do that. You know, it kills credibility, really.
That's interesting.
That's sort of an interesting note.
That's interesting.
For anyone who picks this book up, who has read the Bormann Brotherhood.
All right, super.
Okay, now I'll see if I can scratch up some more evidence on Pete Wilson. If I can, I'll probably have to write to Mabe.
Okay.
And maybe someone can call in to, I guess, sometime tonight, Ted or someone else, and offer
somebody who heard the show.
The true Pete Wilson.
Okay.
Okay?
Super.
All right, take it easy.
Good to hear from you.
Okay,
bye-bye. All right, back to the phones. Number here, 941-2500, if you're calling from within area code 415. If not, 408-9408. Oh, yay, nip. 415-941-2500. I'm really having trouble tonight. Good evening, San Francisco, and welcome to KFJC.
Hello, Nip.
Yes.
Hello. I'm a political novelist. I write detective stories from a socialist point of view, and earlier this summer I started trying my hand at espionage fiction, and I was writing about contemporary Poland, about the coup in December 81, and something about the Pope's visit in the coming year, and I was going to have an assassination attempt, and then all this stuff starts breaking, and it is pretty fantastic, and I've been following your show ever since.
Oh, thank you.
And some things, I think that, you know, what you have said, and Dave Emery and others have said, is right on the money as far as the, you know, the drugs... guns connection and the connection with the Vatican Bank. And just wanted to mention one book that I haven't heard mentioned. It's a new book called The Vatican Connection. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, the name sounds familiar. I don't know anything about it, I don't think.
Well, it's by Richard Hammer, and it's just on the cover. It says, an astonishing account of a $1 billion counterfeit stock deal between the mafia in the church. And one interesting thing is our friend Archbishop Marcinkus is involved.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is the, if I remember correctly, I haven't read this book. I have heard of it. But now this is, among other things, is talking about that the first Sindona case.
Oh, right.
Right? Okay, yeah, go ahead. Now I remember what it's about.
Well, I just, you know, I wanted to tell you that, you know, I agree with to this point with what you have been saying over the radio, but there are some things about the Bulgarian connection that I would like to clear up. And one character who figures and hasn't been mentioned, I haven't heard you mention him, is this Italian trade union leader, Luigi Scricciolo.
Well, there's two Scricciolas.
Huh. Well, the one I'm referring to was the man who was the head of the International Relations Bureau of the Unione Italiana del Lavoro.
Right. Well, this is the thing. I mentioned really briefly tonight at the beginning of the show that I didn't have time to get into it, which was the Lech Walesa thing.
Uh-huh.
Right, where the Scricciolo, I think it's Scricciolo brothers who were both involved in this labor thing and who had contacts with Lech Walesa, and who themselves have also now been third-handedly implicated in this whole guns for drugs route.
Right. Well, there was an article in the December 15th Christian Science Monitor, which is the most comprehensive thing on Scricciola that I had found. And he was arrested during the Dozier kidnapping. He was had some connections, or was alleged to have some connections with the Red Brigades. And according to the article, he has since confessed to have worked with the Bulgarian Secret Service, which, looking at the article in front of me, which instructed him to spy on Solidarity. And he was the first Western trade unionist to visit Poland after the creation of Solidarity. And he had personally organized Walesa's trip to Rome in January 1981. And subsequently, I heard that Scricciola said that the Bulgarians had put him up to organizing an assassination attempt on Walesa, and he backed out. And I would just like to run down that connection, if any of your listeners or you know, or somebody can put me on to that, anything more about Scricciola, because he seems to be the only direct link at this point between the Bulgarians and the assassination on the...
Something besides the Christian Science Monitor. Let me see if I can get Teresa's attention downstairs. If you could get the rest of those magazines, possibly. Not magazines, those articles and stuff. I did have that one Lech Walesa article, which I can turn you on to.
Okay, and I would like to know about Scricciola, and also in the same article it quotes, and I've seen this quote in other places, of Stefan Sverdlov, who was the, as it says in this article, a former chief of the Bulgarian Secret Service who defected to the West 3 years ago, who asserts that the Bulgarian agents are so closely linked to the KGB, reading from the article, that every Bulgarian espionage department takes orders from Soviet officials. In an interview with French television, Sverdlov says he does not, quote, for an instant doubt that Bulgarian agents were involved in the assassination attempt, but that they could do so only on instructions from the KGB. I don't know anything about this man's credibility.
I don't know either.
But I would like to put the word out among your listeners, if anybody has that information on these two men or these two connections, that they might call you and talk about it.
Okay, super. Unfortunately, I just looked through the stuff that I brought up tonight, and I left the Walesa thing at home, knowing in advance that I wasn't going to be able to get to it. So I'm going to have to hold off on that one. I will get that information for you next week, okay?
What periodical was that in?
That's what I don't remember.
Huh.
I really don't remember. It was a newspaper article. It might have been out of, like, the Mercury News, or it could have been from something more obscure. It could have been, you know, something like the National Catholic Reporter. I don't remember. But it, I think it might have actually been the National Catholic Reporter, but I'm going to have to check. So, although that's proving to be more and more a very interesting source of information for this whole case, is the NCR. And the writers seem to be quite good. Anyway, so I will get that information for you. Or if Ted calls later this evening, perhaps he can help out with that, because he himself doesn't know where that article is from. So one way or the other, if we don't get it to you this week, we'll get it to you next week.
Okay, very good.
Okay?
Thanks for talking.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Okay, lines are open at 415-941-2500. And good evening, Menlo Park, and welcome to KFJC.
Good evening, Nip. This is Larry. I have a criticism tonight that I'd like you to respond to.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm overreacting, but it seems to me that you and Dave Emery, when you quote from any leftist publication such as the People's World, seem to make great disclaimers, you know, like you don't want to be associated or thought to be, you know, pinkos or whatever, when, you know, you quote from Eagle Magazine and don't make a disclaimer. And the big one, you know, Mae Brussel writes for Midnight Star or whatever, which makes the People's World look like the New York Times. But I wonder why you don't, every time you quote from Mae Brussel, say, well, Mae Brussel, who writes for the Midnight Star. The...
Well, let's say it's
sleazy, untruthful newspaper, and also I've wondered why Mae Brussel writes for them.
Okay, well, several good questions. First of all, I think I did the couple of times that I read from Eagle Magazine offer a disclaimer on it as being, and I thought it was an important point to say that look, this is if anything, it's a sort of fringe magazine, but it's a fringe right-wing magazine,
right.
Not a fringe left-wing magazine.
But you feel it's important enough to quote from. I mean, if it's...
Because I found that the facts were backed up by other facts I run across. And again, the thing with Eagle Magazine, as with this People's World, is that they had taken the time and the space to put it together into a fairly cognizant, you know, a good comprehensible whole, instead of it being like we're usually dealing with the dailies, you know, and they have one piece.
Right.
And these were, you know, kind of overall... omnibus articles. Now, it's true, I do spend a lot of time disclaiming People's World, and I think one other thing that I quoted from in the past that was another magazine of a similar stripe. And the reason is not because I think that de facto People's World or Eagle Magazine are going to be full of propaganda, but just because we work so hard to maintain credibility, most of the credibility that we obtain is because we're reading these articles and we're collating these things out of articles that anybody can find in their daily newspaper or books that anybody can find at the library, you know. So it's not as if we're dragging up these things. Somebody called last week and said, you know, precisely the opposite of what you're saying, except it was about Mae Brussel, and saying, well, anybody can find support in these, you know, fringe publications for any kind of point of view. Which,
well, I'm not,
you know,
criticizing.
No, I know you're not.
I'm not, but
I'm saying.
It appears as though some people do. Bother you more than.
I'm saying that some people do, and that some people do look at it that way, and that if I don't make it very clear that I have tried as much as possible, just like I do with newspaper articles, to at least get some kind of verification, you know, a second opinion or something on them, that, you know, if somebody just turns it on and hears that and hears me read a lengthy piece out of People's World, they're going to say, oh, you know, another one of these knee-jerk Trotskyite, you know, college radio people,
right,
and turn it off. And that's what worries me. I have nothing against People's World. As a matter of fact, from the bits and pieces I've looked at it, they seem to do an awful good job.
Well, do you have any? Have you heard anything about why Mae Brussel writes for the Midnight Inquirer?
I really don't know. And this is the other thing too, that this guy last week called up, and again, not trying to pin you with anything that's not your fault, but this guy called up last week and was on me for about 10 minutes about Mae Brussel. Now, my main connection with Mae Brussel is that a lot of stuff that she deals with, Dave Emery also runs across because he is involved with her. He talks to her, you know, and Dave does research that I use quite often. So I get it like third hand from Dave, not necessarily the information, but the subject matter. You know, May will work on a story and Dave will go, oh, this looks interesting and this feeds into something we're doing, and he'll hand it over to me. But like, I don't even really, and not because of any personal dislike of the woman's show or anything, I don't even get a chance to listen to her. I'm working when she's on.
Well, I might add on Mae Brussel, when I first started listening to her too, she seems to ramble and say a lot of crazy things, but one thing that I recently learned about her, which is very helpful, is that you can get from her weekly a list of
bibliographies.
Her,
yes, you can.
She packs so much into a show, and it's good that
she does. And
hear all this stuff, but
and she's not a broadcaster.
Who just listens once won't catch this,
sure,
because I think she's just rambling,
making it up or something. No, and she's not a broadcaster,
right,
you know. And but I myself, when I have run it, I mean, I have found her documentation to be very reliable, and that she's not making things up. That she's,
oh, right,
you know, doing it. But the thing is, again, you know, I was on this station, you know, Mae Brussel's been around forever. I mean, she is the godmother of what has been called conspiracy research, which is a term that makes me bridle. But I have been on this station for 2.5 years before we ever put Mae Brussel on. And so I kind of don't even really want to answer questions about her. I feel if her work doesn't stand up on her own, you know, I don't even get a chance to hear her much. So I can't really say much one way or the other, except, you know, when we do run across something that she has offered and it checks out, I will certainly use it, and I will give her credit where it's due, and she does do good work, and her documentation is airtight.
Oh, yes, I agree.
So,
well, thanks a lot, and thanks for taking the criticism and responding.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I need some criticism.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Anyway, back to the phones. We've got some lines open. 415-941-2500. I should just stress that, once again, this is not in any way meant to be an indictment of Mae Brussels' work, because, as I said, most of what I have dealt with in Mae Brussels' work has been excellent. Her style is sometimes a little off-putting for people who are not familiar with it, but again, she does offer bibliographies on all the stuff that she quotes, and you know, she offers up the sources. I just don't want to turn my show, which again is my show and which I am the person responsible for, into a running I can't even think of the word tonight. That's odd when old Nip can't think of a word, but I don't want to turn into a running symposium, there we go, on Mae Brussels' show. Any more than I want to turn into a running symposium on Dave Emery's show, or the McNeil Lehrer show, or Jack Anderson Confidential, or 60 Minutes, or anything else. I don't even really want to turn into a running symposium on my show. I would rather concentrate on the information at hand, and what people think of it. Anyway, enough. A hard rain is going to fall on you, Jack, if you don't get on the phones. The number here is 415-941-2500, and while you're calling, let me read one last piece that's also has to do with another article that we have, another subject that we had talked about at some length, which was AbScam and the variety of strange connections in AbScam. And while you're ringing up those lines, up there goes one. We still got two more open at 941-2500. Let me just read you a little teeny bit here. This is from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for January 16th, 1983. And it's headlined, Jenrette Targeted as, quote, Favor. And this is an article by Richard T. Pienciak. And, oh no, I'm sorry, this is out of the Oregonian for January 18th, 1983. Anyway, this is Dateline Newark, New Jersey, and it says, Justice Department officials said they made former South Carolina Congressman John Jenrette an AbScam target as a, quote, favor for FBI agents in his home state who were unable to indict him on other charges, prosecutors claim in newly released documents. And when AbScam agents met with Jenrette in a Washington, D.C. townhouse December 4, 1979, they were, quote, able to accomplish more in a half hour's time than the FBI in South Carolina was able to during the course of their two-year investigation of Jenrette. An agent from Jenrette's home state is quoted as saying, The targeting of Jenrette and earlier investigations into his alleged involvement with drug smuggling and land fraud was discussed in documents obtained by the Associated Press in a 20-month federal court suit under the Freedom of Information Act. Now, without going on to read the whole rest of the article, because the phones are starting to ring, although there are still lines open, I might add, let me touch real quickly on a couple of things. John Jenrette's aide, John Etheridge, was a member of the company. The company is the group that was responsible for smuggling weapons out of China Lake, etc., etc. Ex-CIA agent, quote, ex-CIA agent Frank Turple, involved with Edwin Wilson and Gary George Corkula, was himself helped out of the country the first time he had to flee the country by Rita Jenrette, who gave him a ride to the airport. Rita Jenrette later claimed it was because they had been in contact with him, because John Jenrette and Frank Turple shared lawyers. So we've talked before about the Guns for Drugs Network and about China Lake and a variety of things, and there seems to be another cementing attachment, is AbScam, which we've also talking about, coming into being to target John Jenrette as far as his drug smuggling. Interestingly enough, I just heard the other day on the newspaper that John Jenrette is currently working in Miami in import-export, of all things. Which has got to be the most entertaining euphemism I've heard in a long time. Anyway, back to the telephones. 941-2500 is the number. We got lines open if you'd like to give me a call. Good evening. And Cupertino, welcome to One Step Beyond.
Hello. I've been listening to your show for a couple of years now and think that this is really pretty great.
Thank you.
It's wilder than most James Bond films I've seen.
It seems like it sometimes.
The reason why I'm calling is that I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, you and Dave Emery had mentioned the name of a book about mind control, and you said that it was a very good book. I was wondering if you could give me the name of that.
Oh, goodness. Let me think. I mentioned a couple. One of them we talked about, I said, was I didn't think was as good, and that was by John Marks, and that was on CIA's MK Ultra. There was another book just called, mind control or the mind control something. And to tell you the truth, I don't have that on the tip of my tongue right now. I will find out for you, however. As a matter of fact, I will write that down right now, and I will find out. And if I can get the information by the end of the show, I will. And if I can't, I will have it for you by next week.
Okay, thank
okay.
you very much.
All righty. I wish I could have been more help, but I will find out for you. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, back to the phones. 941-2500. What is the name of that book? I'm going blank tonight, folks. It's the rain. It short-circuited my synapses. I think that's the only explanation. All those little beads of moisture have gotten into the frontal lobe, and I can hear the little wires popping and hissing right now. So it may be a tough last 25 minutes. I hope you'll bear with me. I hope you'll make it easy for me by giving me a call in. And once again, first-time callers, you know, potential first-time callers, don't be scared. I know it's intimidating stuff, but we're willing to talk about anything. And I know a lot of people that I come into contact with out in the real world have some very basic questions that they want to ask as far as source material on all kinds of things, not just the day-to-day stories that we cover, you know, but on just general things, in clandestine intelligence and the role of the United States in the support of the Nazi state, all kinds of things we've talked about sort of in passing. And, you know, we're happy to do that. Or if you have something you yourself want to share, or, you know, virtually anything. I mean, after all, this is the first One Step Beyond after the two-year anniversary of Ronnie Reagan. So I should think some of you would have some appropriate things you'd want to bring up. Anyway, once again, we do have some lines open still. And just before I go to the phones, let me tell you one more time. The number here is 415-941-2500. While I'm waiting to get the numbers up on the board and while the phones are ringing, let me just tell you this. On the subject of John Jenrette, bear in mind now, it's kind of staggering, but people who've been listening to this show for a long time will note the fact that a variety of cases that we have been talking about over the last 2 years have begun to run together. The Abscam case has begun to drift over into the Edwin Wilson case, which has begun to drift over into the entire P2 Ambrosiano Pope shooting, etc. case, and a variety of other things. The Abscam case has lapsed over into the Red Brigades, which kicks back to Ed Wilson, and we're not making these things up, folks, and those of you who have been listening for a while know that these things are in and of themselves sort of making their own natural connections, and we're not up here hollering conspiracy. We're just pointing these things out. So those of you who are new listeners, part of the fun of listening to this kind of radio programming is that when it's been going on for a while, you begin to see these things for yourself, and you begin to recognize the names in the headlines, and you can make your own connections. It's kind of like dot-to-dots. You remember going on long car trips when you were a kid? There you go. Yeah, Dave remembers. You know, dot-to-dot. Very good. Dave flunked dot-to-dot, unfortunately, but he's still giving it the old college try. Anyway, in just a moment, I am going to go to the telephones, and I do have a line still open, one more line left open at 941-2500, and I've got plenty of time, so if you want to get on the air, this is your big chance. In the interim, I need to know who is on the phones, though, and they're not going to pay any attention to me. Oh, that's okay. That's not what I'm here for, not to have people pay attention to me. Anyway, once again, 941-2500 is the number. Give me a call. Let me know what's on your mind. Good evening, Mountain View. Welcome to One Step Beyond.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun show. I'm a new listener.
Oh, okay, good. Thanks for calling. What's your first name?
I'm Norm.
Okay, Norm. Pardon?
Mountain View.
Alrighty. And what have you got on your mind tonight, Norm?
Okay, I was just wondering if you could give me like two or three of your best confirmations of aha, we told you so type stories.
Aha, we told you so type stories. Okay.
They were confirmed in the press.
Okay, well, quite a few of them. As a matter of fact, this entire Pope thing we've been talking about here in KFJC, we've been linking the P2 scandal with the Banco Ambrosiano Vatican banking scandal, with the assassination of Pope John Paul II for a long time now. And the first two have been conclusively linked, and they've also linked them to the guns for drugs thing that we've been talking about. That has been conclusively linked. And the only thing remaining to be linked, which we've already predicted links up, is the relation of all those others to the Pope's shooting. So there's a couple right there. We also talked about Ed Wilson's connections and the China Lake stuff for a while. And
a lot of this is unfamiliar to me. You're going real fast.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's very long and complicated stuff. We talked about Edwin Wilson, who just was convicted recently, and we talked about his connections, and we predicted the way a lot of things would go. We talked about several of the witnesses who died in the Ed Wilson case and the unlikelihood that they had all met with these strange accidental deaths. And just the other day in the paper, it's revealed that he is not only plotting to kill people, but now he's trying to kill off the prosecutors, et cetera, et cetera. And a variety of other things. What else did we talk about? We predicted back in October of 1980 that Ronald Reagan was going to get shot. That was one we predicted before he even won the election, as a matter of fact. And the bow for that must, in all honesty, go to Mae Brussel, who's talked about that for a long time, that if Ronald Reagan was ever elected, there was a very good chance he was going to be bumped off. We're still predicting, as a matter of fact, that Ronald Reagan will not either will not make it to the end of this term, or if he decides to run again, he will not live till the end of his second term. Oh, goodness, what other things? A variety of things. We talked about... we talked about the Calvi case. We said that Roberto Calvi of the Banco Ambrosiano, which is part of this Pope thing. Pardon?
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, sure.
Are there other stations around the country that run this sort of talk show?
I imagine there are people who do, you know, who are fond of being chastised and humiliated for trying to run these kind of news stories. There are certainly people, other stations in the country that run, say, Mae Brussel. I'm sure there are.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. Well, I think you're doing a real service, and hang in there.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. All righty. This is a very kind of interesting, strange show tonight. I don't know why. It just is. Probably the weather. Probably all the ozone in the air. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going back to the phones. We still have a line left open at 941-2500. Good evening, San Francisco, and welcome to KFJC.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. This is line two here.
Yes.
I want information about the status of anti-totalitarian activists. Do you carry this subject on this or any other program on KFAC?
Anti-totalitarian activists.
Hello?
Can you be more specific?
Well, just information about the status of anti-totalitarian activists.
Well, I know, but I mean, there's a lot of... That's a very broad topic. Can you be more specific as to what kind of anti...
Well, within the collectivist superstructure.
Within the collectivist superstructure.
Within the collectivist superstructure. In other words, you know, if not... See, it can be against the law, and it can be legal, but you can still be thrown in jail for something in, you know, Russia.